Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Tribal Wisdom Radio, your marriage support network. Tune in for all things love, marriage, and family. We are devoted to love. Here we go.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another hour of Tribal Wisdom, where we are celebrating relationship resolutions on a Wednesday night. Happy Wedding Wednesday to everyone. Welcome. Tonight, we will be talking with Heath Wiggins of His Leadership, Her Trust. We're going to be talking about trusting our men to lead. We are talking to the ones that say, help, I don't trust my men to be the leader in the home. Now, Heath, with his roots in the Christian church, learned that the Bible teaches and cultural norms affirm that men should be taking on leadership roles in their relationship. It's not that women can't lead, he says, nor is it that women shouldn't lead, but it's that men should know how and be able to lead too. So we're going to be talking about these two, what I call wonder twins of the relationship, leadership and trust, with Heath Wiggins tonight. Why don't we just go ahead and bring him in and have him introduce himself. Hey, Heath, how are you doing?
Hi, Cynthia. How are you? Thank you for having me on here. I really appreciate it.
Oh, listen, I'm psyched about this conversation because I don't think it's a conversation that we have enough, especially when it comes to those two elements together. When it comes to, we always talk about love, we always talk about love and relationships, but we rarely get a chance to understand the differences between leadership and trust and how we can get ourselves as women to really allow men to lead, especially since, you know, the Bible says that we are to submit, but we don't want to submit to fools. Let me just say that right out.
That is true.
We want to be able to submit or be comfortable submitting to someone we know is able to lead us outside of foolishness, but still within the word, to lead us somewhere where we're going. If we're going to be helpmates, then let's be helpmates to someone who understands his purpose so that we can work our purpose. So let's start out with you telling us who you are, where you're from, and what it is you do.
Sure. Well, first, I like that combo, that dynamic duo of trust and leadership. I'm going to steal that. I hope you don't mind. That was kind of cool. But
the Wonder Twins.
The Wonder Twins. I love that. I'm going to steal that one, too. As you said, I am a relationship consultant. This all started back when my wife and I got engaged. We never dated before we got married. We just got engaged and got married. But that's a long story.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. We're going to get to that.
Okay. But one of the things that, because of the way we came together, we were able to solve problems quickly. For example, when we first got married, we struggled for the first 3 months. But then after those 3 months were over, we were able to figure out a plan for how we were able to approach problems and solve them. And as a result, couples kept coming up to us, asking us for some advice about, you know, how do you solve problems? How do you get over your issues? And we had only been married 6 months, and they had been married 6, 7, 10 years. What I started to do was write down some of the things that I had been telling people over and over and over again. So one, I can email them, and I wouldn't be just repeating myself. And two, just so I can chronicle some of the things that worked well for us. Well, what happened one day is my wife said, what about that business that you said you wanted to start about something called a premarital boot camp? And I had previously had about 7 failed businesses before, so I was kind of begrudgingly thinking about getting back into starting another business. But when she said that, and I remember we were on the subway, and she said that, and it was like the Holy Spirit just smacked me upside the head and was like, this is what you should be doing. And I was like, yes, that's what I should be doing. And so that night we went home and started planning the business, and that was in 2000. And we incorporated. We had no idea what we were doing, but we started our business in 2000. And the plan was always to buy some land and build actual boot camp, ropes course, obstacle courses, challenge activities on the property. And so in 2006, we bought 14 acres in Bowie, Maryland, built a house, and then built our boot camp facility on the property. And that's the beginning of the boot camp.
All right. Well, we're definitely going to be talking about the boot camp during the second half of the show because I want to make sure that couples know about it. Couples that will be getting married and couples who are already married, they should know about this boot camp because they may want to give it a try. And I also want to post the link in the event tonight. But I want to dial it back a little bit so that we can get a little bit of foundation of how it is that you did not date. You just got engaged and got married. I mean, did you guys know each other for a little bit of time? How did this happen?
We were coworkers. We worked together almost in the same cubicle. And we became very, very close friends. We saw each other mature through some very bad relationships and very, very bad relationship decisions. And we saw each other grow as individuals. And my master plan was I wanted to be married by the time I was 27. I didn't want to be 28 and single, so I set a date at 27 when I wanted to be married. Now, mind you, I was 24 when I came up with this plan. And so I said, I'm going to give myself two years to curtail my tomfoolery and hijinks and then find me a wife and then convince her to marry me and then get married in October of 1997. And so as I was going through my list of candidates, if you will, I was checking off the list of who had certain criteria that I was looking for. And no one knew that they were on the list, but everyone knew there was a list. And my wife definitely didn't know she was on the list. What ended up happening is because we were so close friends, I looked at her one day. I was like, wait a minute. I think she makes the list because, you know, right now she's just my coworker. Her name is Bernadette, but everybody calls her Bernie. I said, right now she's just Bernie. So, you know, I guess she does make the list. So one day I realized, okay, she's the one I want. And so I had to now convince her to marry me because we were just coworkers. So it took me about 2 weeks because we had grown so close friends. When I propositioned her, I said, I took her out to dinner and I said, I am interested in entering a relationship with you that leads toward marriage. And she was like, what? Huh? I said, yes, I love you. And I'm not asking you to marry me right now because you can't handle that. But I am interested in entering a relationship with you that leads toward marriage. And I will start my wooing process in about 2 weeks. And she was like, okay, Oprah, Montel, where's the camera? Where's the candid camera? I know this must be a joke. She was looking around the restaurant.
I'm serious.
I mean, she was looking under the table. It was hilarious. So needless to say, she was like dumbfounded and floored. But she had to consider my offer because we had become close friends. She had seen me mature. She trusted me. She trusted my word. She would always come to me for advice about things that she was going through with work or home or family or whatever. And I had wanted to hang out with her and her only. And I had forsaken all of my other people that I hung out with, and I really wanted to hang with her. I'd be over other women's house calling her.
The tomfoolery and the hijinks?
The tomfoolery and the hijinks.
Are we talking about
exactly.
Tomfoolery and hijinks?
We are talking about the tomfoolery and hijinks.
Those are the
back,
jokers.
So.
We're going to name them the Jokers. They're not the Wonder Twins. They're going to be the Jokers.
Right. They are the Jokers. Yes. The big, the little, and the Ace of Diamonds. I mean, the two of Diamonds.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
Long story short, once we decided to get married, well, let me go back one step. When we were, that week after I made that proposition to her, for the first time ever, we had talked on the phone every day. We had never done that before. But we were kind of negotiating our relationship. We were talking about, you know, what about babies? What about cars, driving? What about, you know, household responsibilities? What about this? What about that? We had just now, for the first time ever, talked about that. And we talked about it for a week. And then the following week, it was a Saturday, and I went over to her apartment, and I said that I am was listening to this tape by Apostle Louis Greenup, and he was talking about fathers not letting their daughters enter into marriage without being prepared for marriage, without the man being prepared for marriage. And I told her mm-hmm. about the tape, and I put it in, and she listened to it, and he likened it to somebody being a pilot. He said that it doesn't matter how Holy Ghost filled or saved or sanctified a pilot is, you would not get on a plane or put your daughter on a plane if the pilot did not know how to fly the plane, if he was not trained to fly the plane. And so she looked at me and said, do you know how to fly the plane? And I, with the quickest retort, said, I do. I'm just looking for a co-pilot. And she was like, okay, let's do it. And from that point on, we were engaged. And that was September 1997, and we got married a year later in October of 1997 as per schedule.
Well, I definitely want to say that I love this story. This is an awesome story, and I'm so glad that you're able to tell it, because you said a number of words here that I rarely hear in conversations. You know, you said that you had certain goals and you did certain plannings. You made your list. You knew what you were looking for in a wife. And once you settled on the person that you figured out was part of this list, you decided to go into negotiations, which I'm just like, okay, I understand this language. Although most people say that, you know, you shouldn't be going on lists. Why don't we talk a little bit about the list that you made for the person that would fit you? Now, you know, to my listeners, this may not seem like it's part of the conversation about his trust, rather his leadership, her trust, but to me it is very much the conversation about his leadership, her trust, based on what he's saying. So when you made this list of your wife-to-be, what were the qualities and attributes that you put down?
You made a very good point when you said, what would be the perfect wife for me? Because that's mm-hmm. what I was using to define what I wanted. And I made my list based off of my friends' girlfriends. Those attributes which I wanted and those attributes which I did not want. And a part of my tomfoolery and hijink days, I was able to identify certain qualities from women or in women that I did not want. Oh, I do not want. I definitely don't want that. I didn't want somebody that liked to like a lot of conflict and a lot of strife and a lot of stress. I remember when I was in college and I stayed off campus, and some of my neighbors, whenever they would come over arguing, I would say, "Hey, don't bring that strife into my house. Strife into my house. My house is real peaceful. I like it nice and calm." So I didn't like anybody that was real volatile. I knew we weren't going to get along. I wanted somebody that was a Christian woman that knew the roles of the family and knew the importance of the roles within the family, because I didn't want to have to try to teach that and have somebody try to buck up against those principles that were outside of our family. I mean, they were established outside of our family. And I did not have looks as a criteria. And the reason why is because of Halle Berry. I said, if anybody can divorce Halle Berry, then looks must not be a criteria that keeps people married, because she got divorced a couple times. And so I said, I have to take that off the equation. Even though that is so countercultural and so contrary to what most men do. But as far as my criteria was concerned, I was not going to be looking at looks as a criteria. Now, I kind of maybe was biased towards some attractive women, but that was not a criteria.
I see. Well, I'm going to believe that it wasn't your top criteria, because I cannot believe that you just took it off completely. I think that you probably pushed it down toward the bottom because you wanted all of the other attributes that you were looking for to really stand out. But I'm not going to believe that, you know, that you just took it off the list completely, because I'm sure the women that you were dealing
with that.
Okay.
It wasn't a top
priority.
All right.
Priority. So, exactly. I definitely believe that. But to say that you just took it off completely, I'm like, no, he's not going to get me with that. Sorry. But
maybe
I love it.
It happened to be
list.
The ones that I chose were good looking. But go ahead.
Yes. That's something. At least they were attractive in your eyes. And that is important because attraction is definitely important in any kind of relationship that you're moving toward romance, toward marriage. The attraction has to be there. So I like this. You didn't want conflict. You didn't want strife. You didn't want a volatile woman. I'm not going to even ask about your friend's girlfriend at this point because that's the list that you came up with. That must have been one heck of a relationship. But you did know that you wanted a Christian woman who knew the roles in the family and that wasn't going to buck up against the plan that you guys made as a family. I like that. Now, I want to talk to Heath the pilot. Let's get Heath the pilot on the phone because you said that you were trained. When she asked you, were you trained and able to pilot? You said, yes, I'm just looking for the co-pilot. So I want to know and understand how you were trained, what qualities should women be looking for a man who is trained to be a leader in your home?
That's a great question. How I was trained, because I grew up, I didn't grow up in church, but I got saved when I was 19, and I started going to church when I was 19. And that was in the beginning stages of the tomfoolery and hijinks. And so the church that I was going to, the pastor was teaching what was then series on marriages. And he had a whole bunch of marriage seminars that he was teaching, workshops, and sermons. And over, I think it was a 7-year period, he kept teaching them over and over and over again. And I was one of his armor bearers, so I would go out with him and help him with his seminars. And I just picked up a lot of wisdom underneath his tutelage in leadership. Most of the things, and he had been married, I think, 20-something years at the time. and most of the things I learned about relationship, I learned from him. Now, I did not learn them from my biological father. It's not that he did not teach me, but the things about marriage, because my parents were divorced, were separated when I was 13. And so I really didn't have a concept of relationships and marriage at 13. But as I was 19, 20, 21, I started learning about relationships and learning about what kind of woman I wanted, and I learned a lot of that during that era of my life. It was about 7 years that I actually sat underneath his teaching and picked up a lot of his principles, a lot of the godly principles and his wisdom.
Okay. To that, I have another question. Now, I'm always talking to my friends about desire. And I like to tell them that there are three different types of desire. There's the dormant, awakening, and awakened desire. Before you sat under his tutelage, his lessons, his workshops, did you have a desire to marry, or was that something that came over time?
That was something that I always had. But, see, we're going back to tomfoolery. You know, in every man's life, there's always that one person that, you know, hurts you and you've been scorned and you've been damaged by. And that happened to me when I was in high school. And I swore that feeling I felt that night when I got my heart broken, I would never feel again, ever. And so I built up a facade of an external layer that interacted with society and the world, specifically women, to protect my feelings because I didn't want to be hurt. And so I created this character, this very uber persona that interacted with women in a way that was inappropriate at times and disrespectful at times. But because in my core of who I was, I wanted to be married. I wanted to be relationship. I always just wanted to have one girlfriend, and we would just get married together and be together forever. That was always my plan. But after I got my heart broken, I had to protect that person. And so I created this persona, and it was it was about a 10-year span. I would say about a 8 to 10-year span that I operated in that persona. But after a while, that persona became who I was. And that's why I said during the tomfoolery and hijinks days, I had to take 2 years to actively digress who that person was, because I was at a point, and I knew it, I was at a point in my life, I said, if I meet the woman of my dreams, I will mess up the relationship because of who I am. I will destroy it just because of how I valued women, how I valued relationships, and what I was doing. And I said, I can't do that. I need to get back to who I really was and the person that really wants to be a good husband, wants to be in a relationship. And so it took me 2 years to purposely and consciously, and it was hard. It was hard to consciously dial back somebody that had success in a certain area of relationships, but it was all the wrong kind of success. And that was my motivating factor to want to get back and come up with a plan for, okay, I've got to set a timetable, so I'm going to start now, and then by this time I should be finished with my dialing back, and so I should be ready to marry by 27. I don't know if that answers
your
question.
Wow. No. You, not only did you answer the question well, you opened up the floor to the other questions that I have about how you became the person you are in order to help train other men about leadership and gaining a woman's trust. Now, you said that you built a facade. Now, this facade, of course, is built because of the pain you felt because you had your heart broken. And I know that some of the listeners tonight are in that place right now. Sometimes they know it, sometimes they don't. They may have withdrawn from dating, they have withdrawn from so many different things because they don't feel like they know how to choose their mate, and they're still operating, like you said, you were operating from a place of hurt, so you put up this facade, you put up this negative persona, and although you had success in that persona, it wasn't the type of success that you wanted in the relationship that was going to be long-term.
Right.
So
I really felt...
Go on. You really felt?
No, I really felt that it also had to do with me actually wanting to get my relationship with the Lord a little bit more serious. I think that timing all took place around the same time. And I really felt that I can't continue being this person if I'm going to be the person that I've always envisioned myself being. And that was a very clarion moment for me, that I can't just be this rough and rugged person if I ever want to have a happy wife and happy life.
Yes. At that point, you said that you decided to make purposeful change. You started doing it on purpose. You started saying, I cannot take this into my next life, my new life, so I have to be purposeful about how I'm going to become this husband. I would like for you, for my listeners, to give a piece of advice on how you are able to make purposeful change in order to really begin to set the goals and the planning for marriage, if that's what you desire. If you desire to be married, what are some of the steps that you can take for purposeful change?
Whew, you just asked a huge question because it is hard. The first thing that you have to do is recognize that you cannot do this by yourself. I mean, you cannot. You do not have the capability. You do not have the mental or emotional stamina or fortitude to put yourself through a ringer by yourself without accountability. And so the first thing that you need to do is get somebody whom you trust that has some success in the area where you want to go, and then put yourself in accountability relationship with that person. That's the first thing you do. You cannot do this on your own, and I did not do it on my own, by no means. I had several accountability partners that were older and one that was my close friend. The second thing you need to do is to, and these are mental things you need to do. Before you even start getting into action items, you need to check your mind, because your mind will play tricks on you. Your mind will have you thinking that you need to turn left when you need to turn right. So I'm giving you mental things first. The second thing you need to do is to start learning who you are and what motivates your decision-making. I learned through that process that I was creating a facade of a person because I got hurt when I was 17, and I'm now 25, and I'm still carrying around that hurt from a 17-year-old kid. That's not good. I need to stop that. And I needed to be able to have that truthful moment with myself and say, okay, this is who I am, this is what I'm doing to myself, this is what I'm doing to other people. I'm actually hurting other people, hurting other women's feelings and emotions, and that's not good. This is who I am. And after you recognize who you are and you have somebody to whom you're accountable, then you can start setting steps in place about what am I going to cut back, and give yourself some time to stop and curtail certain aspects of your behavior. For example, I knew that I needed to start treating women with more respect. And so I would practice treating women with respect. Like I would open the door or say something that was kind with no ulterior motive, which was clearly never my intention previously. But I would do it just to see if Heath Wiggins can actually be kind to somebody. I remember I took somebody out to dinner at a fancy restaurant with very little money, but I took her out to dinner just to see if I can take somebody out to dinner and not expect something in return.
Mm-hmm.
That's some next level stuff right there. You just don't think of that stuff on your own. You need somebody to help you walk through that kind of stuff. But I had to eventually cut back on some of the things that I was doing and start some new practices like that, going out to dinner and treating women with respect. And then at the same time, being submitted to somebody that is going to help you. And then give yourself time to succeed and time to fail, because you're not going to get everything right at the same time. You're gonna try some things, and then you're going to fail. But don't beat yourself up thinking, oh, well, I failed, so it must not be meant to be. No, you're going to fail. But factor that failing into your time frame, into your plan. And those are the three things I would give you. Anything else would be too much right now.
Well, you said 4 or 5, probably 10 different things.
Oh.
Because I am writing as fast as I can with what you're saying. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, I love the way that you are breaking this down, especially for a man that was planning to get married. You said you practiced respect. You practice giving without actually wanting or looking to receive something in return. And most importantly, you said you practice submission. So you were literally practicing the things that you would want to receive from your wife. And so you stepped up and did it as a leader. You were literally being a leader in this aspect because it was something that you would want from your wife. So I'm so glad that you said those things, because when it comes to the steps, we don't always know what to practice or what to do, especially as women. I'm not sure if this list also applies to women, but it is an excellent starter list. Now, I know some people are going to be, I'm going to be listening to this show over and over again, because it's excellent so far, everything you said.
Okay.
Now,
I think, but to your point, I do think it can apply to women. Because women have, and we'll probably get into this later, women have created a persona themselves. And that persona,
because they're hurt.
When they bring into exactly, because of hurt, because of past failed relationships, because of what they've seen their mother had to go through without their father, or because of what they experienced from their father's absence or presence and sort of just bad relations. They've created a persona.
Right,
and
physically
now when they
there,
enter
but
into
not necessarily. Right.
Yeah.
No, I was saying that he may even have been physically there, but he didn't necessarily have a relationship with his children.
Exactly. And so that persona has now, when they go into relationships, they have an expectation of either he's going to be better than my dad, or he's going to be just like my dad, so I have to overcompensate for his perceived ineptness that he's going to have.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll get into that later. We'll get into that later.
Yeah. I think I'm seeing that this call is going overtime, because this is a whole lot to talk about. We didn't even get into the leadership and trust yet. We're still, talking about your journey from, hijinks and tomfoolery to the Wonder Twins of of leadership and trust. And what's most important is that you are really saying that you had to travel the road yourself. You had to get an accountability partner. You had to trust that partner. You had to submit to what the partner had to say. You had to submit to what God was doing in your life. And you just had to continuously train. And to the point of factor in failure, I think that's excellent. Because
it's huge.
Yes. Yes. You know, we turn to relationships a lot, and when that relationship doesn't work out, a lot of times we go back to stop dating or stop being involved or engaging ourselves in the process of being able to choose a husband or seeking a wife.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was one of the key things that you mentioned. I was going to ask you about, you know, what is the root of the challenges when it comes to trust? But I think you named them. Maybe you have some more to say about it. When it comes to trust, there is a challenge at the root for both men and women, and we know that it's pain. But is there something else that's creating the challenge after marriage when it comes to allowing someone to lead us or developing and growing in trust?
Now we're about to get into some deep water, because
that's
when
okay.
I got
my galoshes on.
Okay, we're about to get scuba diving deep. But when I first started when I first started writing the book that I've written, and hopefully it'll be out next month. When I first started writing the book that I wrote, I researched trust and what trust is. And what I've learned and from all the research that I've done and all the looking at the relationships that we've been, you know, coaching for the last 15 years, what trust is a level of confidence that you have that someone will meet the expectations according to the relationship status that they hold. For example, that's kind of confusing. So, for example, if you are my fiancé, then I, based upon, and we're talking about Heath now, if I, based upon my tomfoolery and hijinks, based upon my expectations for what I wanted a wife to be and all the requirements that I created my own self and based upon who I perceive you to be and who I know you to be, I have an expectation that you will behave and interact with me like a fiancé, like I expect a fiancé to interact with me. And as long as you are interacting with me according to my expectations, then I have a high level of confidence that in the future you will behave accordingly or you will interact with me accordingly. If for some reason you do something that doesn't comply or comport to my expectations for how you should interact with me as a fiancé, then I have low confidence in the future that you will interact with me in the way that I expect a fiancé or my fiancé to interact with me. And so what confidence is trust. Confidence is trust is the confidence that I have that you will interact with me according to how I perceive you and expect you to interact. So let's say we go out to dinner and you start looking at other guys and start flirting with other guys as my fiancé. Then I don't trust you, meaning I have a low level of confidence that you're going to act differently in the future. So I don't trust that you're going to act differently in the future. The same thing goes for me. If we go out and I start looking at other women or you see some suspicious texts in my phone, then you have a low degree of confidence that I'm going to not text somebody or not interact or not flirt with somebody in the future. So that means you have a low degree of trust. And so that really is a definition of trust and how it works in relationships. And so when you ask the question, how do you get to the point where, what are some barriers to trust, that's what it is. It's I don't, based upon how I expect you to act as according to my fiancé, you are not meeting my expectation for how I think a fiancé should act. And vice versa, if the trust is to be flipped. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. No, it makes perfect sense because you mentioned confidence. You know, trust is correlates with confidence well because you have confidence that someone is going to behave the way that they have at least shown you that that they will behave. So if you have all this time been a person that I can trust, I have confidence that I don't have to check on you, how you behave in front of my face is how you will behave when I'm not around. you will hold a certain level of esteem for yourself and for me to make sure that no one is able to say anything against you to make me question my trust for you.
Exactly. Exactly. Or you won't do something in the future that will question whether, as my fiancé, you were acting inappropriately according to my expectation. Because trust is very selfish. It's very selfish. Because I talk to many different people with different levels of trust. Some women feel comfortable with their man checking out other women and not think this is disrespectful. And that doesn't stymie their trust. Other women, my wife being one of them, does not really like men checking out other women. And that is a confidence blower. That is a trust barrier. So every time we go out, she would be checking, and this happened when we first got married. I did not know that I was looking at other women. That's because I had been doing it for so long, and it just wasn't. I wasn't conscious of it. But she said I kept looking at other women. She would get mad and frustrated, and she had very little trust that I wouldn't look at other women or take it to the next level. And eventually I had to learn, okay, let me curtail that and step that back, because obviously that's causing some conflict in our relationship. But like I said, trust is very selfish. My wife had a expectation for me, you can't look at other women. But if I were to marry somebody else that didn't have that expectation, then we both would be looking at other women and talking about how big her butt is or how nice that dress looks on her.
Right. Well, let's talk about that, because a lot of times in relationships, you know, some people have an expectation that things will change after you say I do. Or as you, just like you didn't really realize that you were checking out other women. It was something, I guess, that, you know, you carried over with your hijinks and tomfoolery.
Exactly.
And didn't realize it was something that you needed to work on. So when it comes up, I like that she addressed it. Let's talk about the things, you know, how do you address issues of trust with your spouse or with your intended?
That's a great question. There's a larger context about how you communicate about sensitive issues that we talk about in our boot camp, because some couples have a difficult time with conflict. Some people avoid conflict. They're conflict avoiders, and they don't like strife or stress. And so if an issue comes up, they'll be passive aggressive. They'll, like, talk underneath their breath, or give you the silent treatment, or try to do something that is that will give you the hint that I'm not pleased, and then expect the intended to fish around and find out and ask a bunch of questions to come up with what is the problem. On the contrary, there's some other people that don't mind conflict, and if they see something wrong, they're going to address it now, they're going to address it quickly, and you better stop it, and I better not see it again. So you have those two dynamics. So there's two different people. So there's not one, I guess, answer to your question. But the larger umbrella of communication and how you address sensitive issues is whatever way that you have identified how to address sensitive issues, you've got to create a system for communication. And what I mean is, if there's an issue that comes up, you have to establish how we're going to bring it up without there being a whole bunch of drama involved, and how I'm going to be able to get my point out and communicate what I want to you without you getting in your feelings and shutting down. And then we have a debate or a conversation about what our expectations are and what we're going to do moving forward. And what we recommend is we call it the two-minute drill. If you have an issue that you want to bring up with me, we say, okay, I need to do it. We need to have a two-minute drill. And then for 2 minutes, you get to talk and share your feelings and share whatever is on your heart about this issue. And then your time is cut off at 2 minutes. Then the next person, your intended, they get to go for 2 minutes in response to your question. And you go back and forth for 2 minutes. And you're able to feel each other's pulse of what actually the issue is, instead of what normally happens is when a couple gets upset or about an issue, they start arguing, and then they argue about how you said what you said. And you're no longer mm-hmm. arguing about the issue itself. You're arguing about how you said, how you going to look at me and say that to me? What you talking about? You better watch your tone. All that stuff is extra, and it's we call it the downward spiraling staircase. You go down the spiraling staircase from the issue, and now you're angry and upset about how you said what you said. And so why I say you need to create a communication process, which one of the tools we say is a two-minute drill. And then through that, you can address these issues. And that allows the person who is a conflict avoider to have their 2 minutes and then say their piece without being passive-aggressive. And it allows the person who is aggressive or loves conflict or doesn't mind conflict to be tempered down some, and they don't over-talk and overburden the conversation with their irie.
Okay. Now, let me say this. Normally by this time we're taking calls or we're telling the callers that they can call in and ask a question. And I did see that we had some people who were ready for some questions, but they're not there now. So I want to, at this point, invite our listeners to call in if you have any questions for Heath. The telephone number is 347-996-3160. Press the number 1 to let me know that you have a question or a comment about this conversation on trust and leadership and allowing our men to lead in the home. I'm so sorry that I didn't respond to that person who was on hold for a second, but I want you to really finish your point. I think it was more important to complete what you were saying about making sure that, you know, you create a system of communication, and you were talking about practicing respect at that time. And that's what I was doing. I was respecting you and allowing you to finish your point. So, again, to our listeners, if you have any questions, no, you're fine. If you have any questions or comments about this conversation about leadership or trust, please give us a call, 347-996-3160. Press the number 1 to let us know that you do have the question or comment, and we'll happily bring you in and include you in this conversation. Now that we've discussed those points, there are a few things that I saw on your blog and some of your blog posts and writings. Now, you talked about the top 2 ways men can provide security for their women. Now, security, I always hear that security is a top priority when it comes to women, you know, that men and women have different needs when it comes to growing in trust and cleaving together in order to create a solid marriage, a solid foundation. So since this particular article talks about security for women, what are these top 2 ways? Continuous learning's pursuit to identify and solve is one you said. And the other was the anatomy of good decision-making, which you mentioned earlier.
Yes. You want to speak on those?
Yes. Let's talk about identify and solve, and then let's talk about the anatomy of good decision-making.
Great. Identify and solve, what I mean is, let me step back, there are 3 different areas or categories of security: financial security, mm-hmm. emotional security, and physical security. And so if a woman is desiring to have all 3, ideally, but sometimes she doesn't get all 3. But in order for you as a man to provide any kind of security, you need to be continuously learning. You need to be aware of how to identify problems in the relationship and figure out how to solve them. That is one of the main things that I've seen a lack of in relationships with men specifically, where they don't know how to solve specific problems, and they're quick to quit and give up and call it quits. It's important to add value and emotional security that to a woman, that you know how to actually identify what may be her source of frustration or pain or her feeling of lack of security, and then address the issue or address the problem that she's having. And that's a key thing that a man needs to learn. And it, every woman is different. So like I said, there's three different kinds of security. So she may be feeling a lack of emotional security, which is a very hard struggle for men because emotionally we just don't know how sometimes to read women. But that's why it's important for you to continue learning and identify what those problems are and be able to solve them.
Now, you mentioned three things, and I don't think I heard the last one. You said financial security, emotional security, and what was the third?
Physical security.
Physical security. Okay, yes. A woman wants to feel safe. So
yes.
Being able to identify the issue, the problem, the situation, because, you know, those are the three different things, is part of that, and then being able to help solve it, if solving it is what she's looking for and not just communicating about it.
Exactly.
Okay.
And that takes a lot of wisdom because a man instinctively wants to solve a problem, and
right.
we as husbands all have to learn that sometimes she doesn't want the problem solved. She just wants to express her feelings, and we have to know the difference.
Okay. So now let's talk about this anatomy of good decision making. Now this is. Oh, I love this title because they're actually starting to teach college courses on good decision-making, which I was like, great, it's about time. They need to take it out of college and start doing that in junior high school and high school because good decision-making is an excellent foundation to trust and leadership. So give us a little tidbit taste of the anatomy of good decision-making.
Well, leaders are all – everything boils down from a leader to his decisions that he makes. That's how leaders are judged, by the decisions they make. But the decision is only the tip of the iceberg. There's so many different factors that go into play when it comes to making the decision. And how I break it down in the article, and I'm trying not to get too scientific, but there's a neurological path that people take when they make a decision. And it all is based upon feelings. When you have a stimulus or you have something that you have to consider on what to do, there is a feeling that is associated with your past experiences about that decision. For example, if I'm trying to make a decision, if I should go to, let's say my wife and I were talking about vacations this week, if we should go on a cruise or we should go to an island as a stay vacation. I have to look in my subconscious memory and realize what are the feelings I have about a cruise and what are the feelings I have about going to an island and staying there. And those feelings are going to influence what plans I make and what decisions I ultimately make. And how that happens is the things that I feel right about or feel that were beneficial to me in the past, those are going to weigh more heavily on my decision-making. And so when it comes to relationships, when you have experiences in past relationships, if you see patterns in your past, like sort of my tomfoolery and hijinks days, if you see patterns in your past that were good, then you will make decisions based upon the feelings that you have that were good. And if you see some things, if you see some patterns in your past relationships, or if he says something that reminds you of the way that your ex-boyfriend used to say something, I didn't like the way you said that, that feeling is going to come forward. And based upon that feeling, you make a decision on what to do or what to say and how to respond to that. And so the anatomy of that decision-making, you first have to recognize your feelings. And then the more that those feelings influence your decision-making, the better decisions that you will make, because you're not sitting at the point in time right now trying to figure out, oh, what should I do? What decision should I make? How should I address this person because he's spoken to me in this kind of way? You're really basing your decisions based upon previous feelings that you have. So the more connected you are to your feelings, the more emotionally astute you are to your feelings, the better decisions you make. So if you have a long history of relationships and making bad decisions in relationships, it's because you're really not connected to your feelings about your past relationships. You either have suppressed them or you're overlooking them. But those people who have long and strong connections to their feelings, and they know, like I did, they know how it felt back then to be hurt, they make better decisions because their feelings are driving their decisions, not something that is happening right now and they may be confused about.
Excellent. Excellent. I love that you're driving home the point that you really do need to know yourself. That is one of the things that we like to drive home here at Tribal Wisdom, that it is so important to know yourself, to know who you are before you really start to get into a relationship, because you don't want to start figuring things out afterwards and then have someone else caught up in your journey of trying to figure out who you are. You know, that causes a lot of chaos in everyone's life. Now, I do see that we do have a call. We have a question.
Oh, good.
Caller, your last four digits are 5627. I'm going to bring you in. And go ahead and let me know what question or comment you have. You are on the air with Tribal Wisdom.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. The question I have is, the gentleman, I forgot his name, but I mentioned earlier that you should trust your feelings, should be connected to your feelings in order to make good decisions. But previously you were sharing how having a bad relationship or bad experience or having his heart broken, he had built a barrier. And that was kind of, you know, destructing in terms of future relationships. So I think he was making bad decision at the time. Am I wrong or am I right? But he did trust his feeling because he remembered how bad he was when his heart was broken. So he decided to do something about it, meaning that, you know, I don't want to get hurt again. But I don't think that was the right decision, was it?
Well, in hindsight, no, it was not the right decision, which is why I ended up changing courses and basically rerouting my entire life. The decisions I made when I was 17 to create this persona was my only experience of ever being hurt. So I was making a decision from a uninformed position. I had no previous feelings about being hurt. And so I did what I thought was best, which was the wrong thing. And it just snowballed into this big tomfoolery and hijinks persona that I created. But when I got in touch with my feelings and realized that, you know what, I'm hurting people, I'm doing things that are not appropriate, I need to get, you know, more serious about my relationship with God, I made different decisions after I got more in touch with my feelings. So in the beginning, no, I did make bad decisions. I did make bad decisions. But as I grew and matured, I eventually got in touch with my feelings and switched courses.
Oh, okay. Right. So you're saying that when you were 17 and then you got hurt, so the fact that you had built that barrier, that protective shield, so that means that you did not get in touch with your feeling then. So you were just reacting, but you didn't know what you were reacting against.
You hit it exactly. I was just reacting.
Okay.
I was in self-preservation mode. I was protecting myself. Mm-hmm. I need to protect my feelings. I don't need to get in touch with them. I need to protect them. And that's what I created this persona to create them.
I got it. Thanks.
I love it.
Sure.
I love it. Okay. So I think that was a great question. They definitely wanted you to clarify what it was that happened, why you were making those bad decisions. And it wasn't because you just didn't know better, but you were really reacting from a place of hurt. Now, we have another caller on the line. Caller, your number ending in 5558. We're bringing you in. Welcome to Tribal Wisdom. Let us know what your question or comment is.
Hello, good evening. My name is Pierre Lucy, and I'm a good friend of Heath Wiggins. And I just wanted to call in and say that I'm really enjoying the conversation. My wife and I tonight, we have had the privilege of knowing Heath and his wife for a very long time. And I have personally watched Heath just evolve into this incredible man of God, and I've seen him interact in his marriage. And, man, I'm just godly proud of you, proud to be a friend, and excited about what you are teaching us. And, man, I just wanted to call in and say, man, we are excited about what you're talking about, and just want to let you know we're out here listening.
Wow, Pierre, I really appreciate you calling in and giving me those words of encouragement. Thank you a lot. You know, you and your wife are the loves of our lives, and we really appreciate you all, too.
Thank you.
I'm so glad that you have people who are calling in and saying, yes, what his journey is actually helping us now on our journey in marriage and in relationship and in leadership and in trust. So believe it or not, we have like 4 minutes left, like 4 or 5 minutes left on the show.
Okay.
We had a really great talk. I loved it. and I can't
great.
Wait for us to do the Twitter chat. Yeah. And I can't wait for us to do the Twitter chat on this. But in these last few moments, let's get into the meat of trust and leadership. So, you know, sometimes I like to do like a quick fire. If you had to name, you know, three top things in order for what should men be doing, you know, where, no matter what stage of relationship they're in, whether you are seeking a wife, whether you are currently engaged and about to be married, or if you are now married and you are having these challenges, what are some of the things that you need to do in order to really bone up, you know, man up on your leadership, and how can you help your spouse trust you more so that you can now lead the home the way it should be led according to what you say society says and what the word says?
Well, you just set me up with two big questions. What can a man be doing more? I touched on some of it previously. You need to be continually learning. You need to be in a place where you are submitted to somebody and you have some accountability in your life, because you cannot. Pierre, who just called in, was one of my peer accountability partner when I was in my tomfoolery and hijink stage. He kept me right on occasion. We both kept each other right on occasion.
I love it.
But you need to be accountable to somebody. That you cannot get beyond that. You do have to continue learning, and you have to be honest with yourself and recognize who you are, and what you're doing, and try to make some changes in your life. I mean, those are just the three things that men have to do. And what was your second question?
How can we get women to trust more?
Trust you more, right?
You know, yeah, to trust more in a relationship. So, you know, to trust our men to lead in a relationship.
Yeah, well, that doesn't happen in a vacuum. Trust is earned, not given. When the Bible talks about wives submitting, that is a directive that the Bible says wives need to do, regardless if a man has earned it or not. There's no condition on submitting. It was evident with Sarah and Abraham. So there's no condition on submitting. But there are conditions on trust, because you can be married to somebody and submit to someone to whom you don't trust. So trust is not created in the vacuum. It's a give and take. It has to be earned. Like I said, the expectations that you gain, that you have already, and you gain trust from your mate, those need to be developed over time. Hopefully they're developed in the dating and courtship process, and there's some trust there. But if that trust is breached and you now are struggling with trusting again, the person that has broken trust needs to overemphasize or overdo the value that he adds to the relationship by being very, very transparent, by giving more information than she requires, because he has to build up that confidence in her that his future actions will comport to the status that he holds in her life. That's the trade-off that they need to make. And from a woman's perspective, she needs to make it clear and put very, very strong conditions on this is what the expectation that I need to see from you, and this is what I'm expecting to do if you ever want me to trust you again. I was dealing with a woman who was having trust issues with her husband, and that's exactly what I told her. I said, give him a six-month window. I need to see your phone. I need to have access to your phone for 6 months before I can trust you again with this whole texting thing. And she gave him that stipulation. And any time that she wants, she can have access to her phone. And if he does not do that, then her trust is not really being built back up. And those are the things I think a woman can do to earn that trust, I mean, to try to get her man to trust him.
All right, let's talk about where, for our listeners, you know, I'm so sorry that I didn't give a warning. I did give a warning that, you know, we had 4 minutes left, but if you were listening on the internet, you can no longer hear this conversation. The lucky individuals who called in, you can still hear everything at this point. And those who were on the internet, you'll just have to listen to the show again. Of course, we're always happy when you do that. So I would like for Heath to let us know where we can find you on Facebook, on Twitter, your website, everything. How can people get in contact with you about your programs and about the boot camp? We didn't even get a chance to talk about the boot camp, so you're going to have to come back on.
I know. You can contact me at hisleadershiphertrust.com. All my information is there. If I'm on Facebook at His Leadership Her Trust. I'm on Twitter at His Leadership. Those three things, Facebook, Twitter, and my website, hisleadershiphertrust.com. We also have a new schedule of courses that we just launched in our boot camp, and we have them all listed. The schedules are all listed online, and you can see videos of what we actually do underneath the Family Boot Camp link, and you can see testimonials of people that have actually gone through the boot camp and experienced some of the things that we've taught. Those three things.
Excellent. Excellent, excellent. Yes, we have come to the end of another wonderful relationship resolutions show. I don't know about you guys, but I thoroughly enjoyed it and learned a lot from this show myself. I can't wait to share a few things with you. I will let you know when the show is up and ready to be heard again. But for now, I want to tell you about next week's show. We're going to have Lisa Scott on the show. This is our month of love. As you know, we are in February, so it's our month of love. She is a life and a self-awareness facilitator. She's not only a self-awareness facilitator for relationships, but for business. She is an energy intuitive, and she provides a safe space for you to become aware of your own thoughts. When we talk about relationships on this show, we like to make sure that you really get a sense of who you are so that you can move forward into relationships. So next week, we're going to continue the conversation on trust, but we're going to talk about trusting ourselves to stop looking outside ourselves for the answers and move from paralyzed to empowerment so that we can have successful relationships. We are so happy that you guys had a chance to listen in. We'll see you next week, 9:30. Don't forget to listen in on Monday with the Couples Motivator with Gregory and Cheryl Clark. They are hilarious. I love them. And, of course, Passion Talk with Kim Duncan on Tuesdays. We love you here at Trouble Wisdom. Remember, it's not just about love. It's about relationship. We will see you
next week. Thank you so much for joining us tonight on Tribal Wisdom. Stop by BridalTribe.com and visit our media page for full recaps of every show, amazing articles, and free downloads. We have an ever-growing library of knowledgeable guests with vital information for any stage of your relationship. At Tribal Wisdom, we are order and excellence in action, and we are devoted to love.